And I want to thank everybody for joining us for the return of the Chalon Chabura. If it's even in the small Zoom environment, we're still able to go ahead and enjoy. Dr. Wenger asked me to extend Chalon Chabura to coffee ice cream Chabura as well. So, of course, as long as it's from any Fleishig Chalon, join in and enjoy us. I've got three good Chalas for you this week. I think you're going to enjoy them all. But we'll see which one you feel like tackling, which ones during the time that we have. Question number one. While missing being in shul immensely and losing the calm and reassurance that comes from knowing that I'm davening with a group that will help bring my personal tefillah to a special place, I'm davening at home and doing my best to make the most of the situation. I find that it helps my kavana if I surround myself with pictures of my family and loved ones, which helps me remember to keep these people in my tefillah thoughts. I even keep a picture of the shul there so I can remember all of my neighbors. Is that a good idea? And can we get the entire community to do it? That's question number one. Question number two was, my friend was diagnosed with COVID-19 and suffered immensely. Baruch Hashem, he was given a clean bill of health. The cocktail worked. My friend is now home and wants to thank Hashem publicly. Can he bench Gomel over Zoom? Should he bench Gomel over Zoom? And then the third question, and this was a late breaking winner. Social distancing has required a new way of educating our children. This includes the process of teaching and testing long distance. Some teachers have resorted to giving online tests, knowing that their teaching time is limited. Is it a problem of Lifnei Iver giving students tests online, asking them to be honest and not cheat, and knowing that a certain percentage will be dishonest? So the question, cheating and teaching, COVID-19, benching Gomel on Zoom, and of course, the pictures during davening. Which of the three do people, if any preferences, which of them do people want us to start with? Right.
Can we go with the first one?
Okay. So we have, I've got a chat request for three, and you want to start with number one. So David, the voices carry first, and we'll see if we can get to number three afterwards. Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, David. Now I can hear you. Oh, now that you've been outvoted, now I can hear you. Okay, we'll start with one. I'm sure we'll get to three also. Secretly, David, one is a little bit more fun a shaila than three. Okay, but we'll get to both. Okay, while missing being in shul immensely and losing the calm and reassurance that comes from knowing I'm davening with a group that will help me bring my personal tefillah to a place that I'm davening at home and doing my best, blah blah blah, I find it helps my kavana if I surround myself with pictures of my family and loved ones, which helps me remember to keep these people in my tefillah thoughts. Is that a good idea? Can we get the entire community to do it? What do people think? And now, before you paskin, remember how this class works. If you're going to give me an answer, you're going to have to be able to tell me what and where and how goes into the whole basis that led you into your final conclusion. David shaking his head no. David doesn't think that it's a good idea. So he's thinking is, by now I would have heard about it from some shul somewhere. Now, David, why is your impression that this is not a good idea?
Well, also shaking because I'm not sure if I could back it up as much as you say. So that's
okay. Like, give it a try. Why would you say no?
I can't buy it. It's okay. Unprecedented.
Gotcha. My gut says it's a bad idea. Okay. Anybody else? Thoughts? Moshe, Dina?
I would be very distracted by it. So, and I know that, you know, davening in the house, and there's this, actually, I'll give you an example. Like, there's a sitter that we use, and it's got the most beautiful pictures in it of, you know, of Jewish pride, of, you know, Holocaust survivors and all sorts of other things. And while it's a beautiful sitter, I'm sometimes more interested in the background than the words. So it could be.
So Dave, so Moses says, wait a second, maybe we should consider, like, you know, is there a distractibility factor, right? And certainly his proof is from a sitter. It's funny you brought those two examples up. The big discussion over here begins at a much earlier point in time. There are a lot of different halachos that go on and discuss where one is supposed to daven and how to choose a location to daven. The Rambam, for instance, in Parakei of Hilchos Tefila, Halacha Vav points out that when one builds a shul, one should try to build a shul in a place where there's a window or an opening facing Yerushalayim, which seems to suggest that having windows is a good thing. And the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Tzadi, Sif Hei, points out that you shouldn't daven in an open area like a field or a street if it's in an unclean component. Or a person shouldn't daven in the doorway of a shul. I daven during the week when I can, not now obviously, but in the wintertime. I've been davening a lot during the week in a yeshiva that's not too far away from my office. Now, the truth is their mincha time is somewhat unpredictable. So sometimes you come in and there's 20 minutes until mincha, and sometimes you walk in and you're 5 minutes late. And you know how late you are by how close to the door you have to daven because it's too close to the door. Because, you know, five other people came in and found them in the middle of Shemona Esrei. Well, if you can't be within, if you can only daven closer than 2.5 feet of the shul entrance, not a good thing, says the Shulchan Aruch and Aruch Haim Siman Tzadi, Zipkov. And of course, the Shulchan Aruch also adds that you when you're davening, you shouldn't face drawings on clothing or on walls. And you shouldn't stand directly in front of your teacher. Why? First of all, what's up with the windows? Right? So Rashi in Masechta Brachos, on Daf Lamed Dalet Amud Beis, Rashi says, if you have a window, you can look up to Shamayim and focus your attention on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, similar to what Moshe's concern was, but Rashi uses it as an advantage point. The Prisha in Aruch Haim Siman Tzadi Hei quotes the Truma Sadeshin, who says that sometimes you can look up to Shamayim when I'm davening. I look up and it helps me. All right, that's his understanding, says the Prisha. Maybe that gives rise to one of the most famous lines in Tehillim when we say, Esa Einai El Haharim, I lift my eyes towards the mountains, may I in Yavo Isri. But a person should most of the time not daven up with his eyes up in Shemayim, like this, right? Instead, the primary place where a person should daven is looking down, not staring out a window. The Magen Avraham in Siman Tzadi Sifkat and Dalet says that while a person should be looking downwards, if you lose your focus, then look up because it gives you inspiration. The Prisha adds that there's a different benefit of having a window. You know what the other benefit of having a window is?
You have light so you could see.
Right. You have light and also air. And so Prisha says, you know, if you need a focus and you're like choking or you can't see so well, not so good. So, you know, the whole idea of having the windows in the shul was an understanding that these are all things that would promote healthy tefillah. Is it healthy tefillah because it gives you a focus, or is it just practical to have good air and good lighting? Of course, this leads the Kesem Mishnah quote from the Tshuva Sarambam that having windows has nothing to do with a shul. It only has to do with davening in a house. But it sounds like the Kesem Mishnah was written by Rav Yosef Cairo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch. It sounds like by the time he got around to the Shulchan Aruch, he seems to imply shul should also have windows, and the Mishnah Berurah in Siman Tzadi Sivkat and Ches specifically says that a shul should have windows, right? In fact, the Shulchan Aruch seems to suggest that you should have 12 windows, and when you're building a shul, that's where they got the idea of making it all those old shuls that have all the stained glass windows with all the different shvatim. It's all based on that idea in the Shulchan Aruch that it's a good idea. And ideally, at least one should face Yerushalayim. It doesn't matter whether it's evenly spaced or the other windows. Do whatever you want with the others. Okay. This is all great if we were talking about windows. But what our person who asked about was not windows, but rather pictures. What's the difference between a window and a picture? So the Beis Yosef in Siman Tzadi quotes the Avud Raham, who quotes the Rambam, who says that when you face a picture when you're davening, right? It's going to be distracting. So the be all and end all would be close your eyes when you're doing it. If you remember to close your eyes, it'll keep you from being distracted. In fact, the Rama in Siman Sadi Sif Chav Gimel notes that for this reason, the Ramosha Isserles and Ramosha Ambender both are one and of the same mind. Ramosha Isserles and Ramosha Ambender both point out that Siddurim should dafka not have pictures in it. And why should they not have pictures? So both Rabbi Ambender and Rabbi Isserles point out that if you have Siddurim with pictures in it, it's going to be distracting. Nonetheless, do you think this is something that's only applicable in the modern time? We already find that Tosfos in the aforementioned Masechta that you mentioned when we right before we started, Moshe, Tosfos in Yuma and Daf Nun Dalet Amud Aleph comments and says that there were people who wanted to go ahead and draw birds and animals inside their siddurim. Tosfos says he thinks this is terrible and it's a really not a good idea, because if that's the case, what are you going to be focusing on? Exactly what Moshe Ambender said. What's going to happen is you're going to be looking at the images, not at the idea of focusing on Avinu Shabashamayim. Old problem, not new. Old problem, but it carries a lot of weight even in the 21st century. The Kaf HaChaim in Siman Sadi Sif Kuf Lamed Zayin. The Kaf HaChaim was a very interesting fellow, a huge Talmud Chacham, super duper. There's like almost nothing he forgets. Sfardi Talmud Chacham. But he was a very, very, very interesting man, spent his life as a hermit. So he didn't really have like the same challenges in life as everybody else. So he turns around and he says, hey, you want to know something? If you want to avoid being distracted during tefillah, it's best if you only look into a sitter or close your eyes. But anything that's going to distract you, anything, should not be in your line of vision when you're davening. Which is kind of amazing, because there's pretty much nothing that's not in your line of vision. However, this does become a challenge for those of us who are thinking to ourselves, hey, wait a second. You know what would be ideal? If I would daven facing the Kotel cam. Right? Like, I'll go to the Kotel camera. It's available. You can do this. In fact, I went on to Kotel cam this week when they opened up the Kotel. They opened up the Kotel, by the way, just for the people in the Old City. If you don't live within the Old City, you're not allowed to go to the Kotel right now. And they have like cops out there and et cetera blocking the way. But you should just know, you know, when you see it, they are broadcasting tefillos. They're broadcasting tefillos on Israel time, right? But you can, you know, if you want to watch it, ma tov u ma noyim. If you want to participate, different ballgame, right? So, again, to daven in front of the Kotel image should present the same problem. Why is that? You're going to watch all these guys walking across the screen? Think about what that's going to look like and how distracted you'll be. I was watching for 5 minutes and I'm trying to figure out, hey, wait, who's that guy down at the Kotel? Who's this guy at the Kotel? Yeah, it becomes a much bigger challenge. The Piskei Tshuvos, which is a great modern compilation of all the different responsa literature, he says, look, a person shouldn't dive in near a shul bulletin board or near a bookcase in a shul. Because when you dive in near the bookcase, you know what you notice? Every time I go into Amora Hills, I always notice all the new things that Rabbi Bleicher put on the shelves, right? So can you imagine if I'm standing in shul and I'm diving right by that wonderful bookcase in the back? I'm like, oh, maybe I haven't seen this book before and this. And I'm not concentrating on the tefillah. It's a bad practice. Don't dive in front of the bookcase. Don't dive in front of the bulletin board. Even in my own library over here, and you're welcome to my shtibel, right, where we daven the Sechashkenaz, by the way, you know. So I will tell you that sometimes I have to be careful, because when I'm davening, the Mizrach happens to be behind me, right? If I'm not careful, I notice everything in each of the Sfarim in front of me. That's a problem. So the Piskei Tshuva says you got to be careful in those cases. The Magi Avram over here and Or HaChaim Siman Sadi Seif Katan Lamed Zayin says that even when you have a shul, you should be careful not to paint pictures in on the walls of the shul unless they're out of somebody's line of vision. Now, how do you make sure it's out of somebody's line of vision? So the Or HaShulchan comments in Simon Sadisif Chav Chez, he says it has to be above the line of vision. What's the above the line of vision? So in Cologne, Germany, going all the way back to the period of the late Rishonim, the Mordechai came along and explained that they used to have a shul that had paintings on the wall. They used to have shul which had paintings on the wall. And when they had these paintings on the wall of the shul, so the Mordechai insisted that those pictures on the wall should be removed, especially the ones of snakes and lions. And the Divrei Malkiel in 1910 was asked the following shaila. Now that my friend Marvin is here, I'll appreciate the shaila, right? The Divrei Malkiel, or Malkiel Tannenbaum, was asked in the late 1800s, the people wanted to do something special. They were all Zionists, and so they came to the Divrei Malkiel and said, we want to hang a picture of Theodor Herzl in our shul. And we hang a picture of Herzl in the shul. So the Divrei Malkiel says, forget about Herzl. You shouldn't hang portraits in shul in general. Why is that? Distracting. Based on this, Rabbi Yitzchak Yosef, the current Sephardic chief rabbi Paskins in the Yalkut Yosef, that it's not only Herzl. Pictures of Gedolim should also not be hung in the actual shul. You want to have pictures of Gedolim? Where do you put the pictures of the Gedolim? In the lobby. In the lobby next to the pictures of the past presidents. And sure enough, in many, many shuls, you'll notice that they have these beautiful portraits of all the past presidents. I've threatened all our past presidents with that, starting with the founding chairman himself. There are a number of people in shul who threatened to have them painted for the founding chairman and others, but Be'ezus Hashem, and not to be placed in the sanctuary. Roshaya Shukon disagrees. Who was Roshaya Shukon? Do you remember? He was the chief rabbi of Haifa. Yes, a fantastic individual. And he was the father-in-law of, he was the brother-in-law of Rav Goren. And his father was very famous for having one unique position. He was known as Rav David HaKohen or Rav David Ol the
Nazir. Right?
Very good. He was Rav David HaNazir. So he was, his father, Shayash of Cohen's father, was a tremendous, tremendous Talmud, one of the number one Talmudim of Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Kok. So Rav Shayash of Cohen testified that he knows that the large guest room in Rav Cook's house had a lot of pictures of Gedolim in it. And Rav Cook would often use that room as a Beis HaKnesses, as a place to daven. Says Rav Shayash Makon, if it was good enough for my father's Rebbe, must be that it's mutter to have pictures of Gedolim. Ah, so what about Herzl and the Divrei Malkiel? So Rav Shayash Makon seems to suggest there must be more than one opinion over here. However, to put things back and support the position of Rav Yitzchak Yosef, in the Or LeZion, Rabbi Zion Abishol also notes that if you're davening facing pictures of people, even if your eyes are closed, there's a different problem. What's the different problem over here?
Might look like you're praying to that person.
Yeah, very good. And so therefore, a person should make it his business not to go ahead and put up those pictures. And so therefore, even if you're going to daven with your eyes closed, and certainly for the person who is asking, hey, Rabbi, can you make this suggestion? We'll put up big pictures of AI, right? And we're going to have people daven facing AI or on the Kotel cam. These things are not highly recommended. In fact, in a Shiva house, we often have this problem. We'll go to a Shiva house, right? And there'll be pictures. You know, we cover the mirrors, but not the pictures. So they quote Rabbi Zivotofsky in the current edition of the Jewish Action, quotes from Rav David Cohn, the great posek of Brooklyn, the Rav of Gvul Yavetz, who said, you know, in a base oven, maybe it's a little bit different because everyone knows when you're in a base oven, when you're in an oven's house, then what's happening to you in that moment? That, you know, people know people have pictures in a house, so therefore then no one will come to the conclusion that you may be bowing to somebody in Avodah Zarah. But if you ask the question, it's a nice thing that you want to have inspiration, take inspiration from tefillah and not from pictures in a siddur, and not from the Koto cam, and certainly not by putting up pictures inside our shul. Okay? So that will be question number one. Okay? Everyone in agreement?
Okay, good.
So, just because Marvin's in, but David, I made you a deal, so I know which one we're doing next. Marvin, question number two had to do with benching Gomel on Zoom, right? And question number three had to do with giving tests on in a situation where the Rebbes and the teachers know that we're asking the kids to be honest, or basically an honor code, right? So here again, David asked me to cover this one. Maybe we'll be able to do all three tonight. Social distancing has required a new way of educating our children. This includes the process of teaching and testing long distance. Some teachers have resorted to giving online tests, knowing that their teaching time is limited. Is it a problem of Lifnei Iver giving students tests online and asking them to be honest and not cheat, and knowing that a certain percentage will be dishonest? Thoughts?
What type of a question is that? Because the kid could be in a regular class and he could be cheating also. Excellent. So having the kids on the honor system at home, it builds character.
Okay. So Dr. Wenger is a big fan of what is that, Marv? I was just commenting. Marv, is that you?
I said, how about being done the cuffs chutz?
Okay.
Instead of accusatory, why not take kids be honest?
Okay. So Marv says, Austin, you should be honest. Why are we not giving the kids the opportunity to be honest instead of teaching them and assuming that the kids are going to cheat? Any other thoughts?
Well, it's not necessarily Lifnei Iver can be mitigated by mixing the tests up and creating a scenario that not everybody has the same questions.
Does the teacher have to go that far, in your opinion?
I mean, at least to shuffle the deck a little bit. If you're giving the same, the opportunity does create itself that people are able to do stuff under the table. They can text their friends, what's the answer number 7? Person has a different, or at least shuffle that you create a little bit of a distraction, a little bit of a way that's from happening.
Okay. So you think that, okay. So let me just backtrack and realize and help and host the basic understanding that David and I are working with. Lifnei Iver has certain parameters limited to it. You can only violate Lifnei Iver, one, if the Isser is an Isser D'oraisa versus an Isser D'rabbanan. And two, you can't violate Lifnei Iver if the possibility exists even without you. Right? It's called, those of you who remember when we learned Masech Avodah Zarah, it's called Chad Avri Dinara versus Trey Avri Dinara. If a Nazir comes along and asks me for a glass of wine, and Nazir is not allowed to drink wine products, and I give it to him, did I just violate the prohibition, of Lifnei Iver Lo Sipein Nefsho? Now, if the Nazir had his own way of being able, or someone else could have just as easily gotten to him and given him the same glass of wine, that's not going to, I'm not guilty of Lifnei Iver. Why? Because it's what we call a Trey Avri versus a Chad Avri Dinara situation. Okay. Now, so there are two factors that are going to come into our question. The first one is it usher to cheat? Devorah says yes. I'm surprised.
It's like Deraita.
I'm sorry?
Deraita. It's in like Vayikra. You can't cheat. You have to have just weight the measures.
Right. So I have to tell you,
Dave Adat.
Okay. So now we're starting to talk terminology. Good. So the fact is, there is a general prohibition called Gnevas Das. The Rambam in Hilchos Deos, Perek Beis Halacha Vav, says that Gnevas Das is, by definition, And Isser in the Torah, the Smog also says it's part of Los Ignovo, because stealing your mind, which is what Yaakov Avinu was accused of by Lavan in Bereishis, Parak Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Chavav, right? And Genevas Das Yisrael, which the Navi accuses Avshalom of in Shmuel Beis, Parak Tesvav, Pasuk Vav, it seems to be a prohibition midoraisa, at least according to the Smag, who says stealing somebody's mind, giving them a wrong impression, is a straight out theft. I used to have a tshuva on my wall. I used to have when I was a kid. I was a funky kid. Some people had pictures of rock stars on the wall. Some people had Daryl Strawberry on their wall. I had tshuvas from Igros Moshe and funky other tshuvas. So there was one tshuva that I had. I had three or four of them. So one of the tshuvas I had on my wall was from Igros Moshe, Chosha Mishpat, Chelek Beis, Simon Lamed. And I grew up in New York State, so of course this was known as the famous Regent Tshuva. Now you have to remember, when I was in ninth grade, I was on my way to school, and the bus driver was taking us to school, and he stops at the train station, in the Woodbridge train station, and he says, "Guys, here's 50 cents, don't forget that I've always done something good for you." What was 50 cents? He gets out of the bus, stops at the train station, buys a copy of, you remember, Moshe? The New York Post. Why did he buy the copy of the New York Post? Because that day, on the front page of the New York Post, they printed the answers to the chemistry regents. What had happened was, there was a bet in the newsroom, in the New York Post newsroom, as to who could get the answers to a Regents exam faster. And the guy who won did it in under 30 minutes, which was like unheard of. He came in through the fax. The other guy was first making his phone calls, and the first guy goes, "I'd like my money, please." And they were so amazed by this, they published it on the front page. That was fine. But if you opened up the newspaper and you went a couple of pages in, you saw a picture of a guy in a hat, pushed back, and his hands on his beard. And guess who got arrested for something very similar? And that was not worth 50 cents. It wasn't worth it. And Ramosha had a tshuva. That's the day I found the tshuva and I hung it up on my wall. Why? Because Ramosha Feinstein had a tshuva where he said, you know, of course it's us that are cheap. And not only does he say it's a question, it's not only just a question of Geneva's Das, which he thinks is anyway a problem. He says it's straight up Geneva. Do you know why? Because what happens? When you get a good grade, right, you're going to get ahead. And if you get ahead, not without any degree of honesty, so then what happens?
You take someone else's.
Taking what will ultimately somebody else's rightful job, right? And you're going to take it away from somebody else when really HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, you wanted the job to go to somebody else. You're going to cheat that person. And this becomes a big problem. Then Ramosha goes on to say that he understands that, you know, obviously this is not something that happens for Jews. Jews don't cheat. And he wishes that, you know, every other nation just wants to say that because they can't understand why we do so well. It should be pointed out, Ramosha is not the only one who says that. There is a tshuva that appears in the writings of Rav Vosner. Rav Vosner was one of the great luminaries of our generation, learned in Chachmei Lublin, Rav in Bnei Brak for many years, in Shevet Alevi Chelek Yud, him in Kuf Samach Gimel. There's a certain principal of a certain seminary in Israel, whose name he writes out with the address, and he says, the principal put out punishments for students who got caught cheating. And the parents said, it's vicious. You're evil for punishing the kids who cheat. So he wrote, so the principal writes to Rav Moshe, I'm sorry, to Rav Vosner, to ask, are students allowed to cheat, right? So, of course, what do you think Rav Vosner said? He says, without a doubt, of course you're not allowed to cheat. He says, how could anyone think in the world of education that you're allowed to cheat? He says it leads to Gnevas Das. It teaches you not to lie. You know, we are told Tirchak, right? Limdu Lishonam Ladaber Sheker, which all of which these things lead to mistakes and energy that gets wasted right? And just leads us down a slippery slope. Students are going to start to consider themselves experts when they're not, which is going to cause financial damage. And all these people, all of this becomes like one never-ending slippery slope of a mix show. You're not allowed to cheat. And just in case you think it's only one type of hat that people wear, there is a volume of tshuvas called Iture Kohanim. It's written, it's a volume, the Kovetz, it's a monthly Kovetz. And in 1989, in Nisan, on pages 19 and 20, they quote from the great Rav Shlomo Aviner, who was also asked a similar question in his communities. He said, there's a competition among students whereby the students have to take math, English, and Gemara, and their grades in there, you know, sort of help determine who's getting into this special program. So there's a lot of cheating that goes on in the program. And the person asked Rav Aviner, can I cheat because everyone else is cheating? So Rav Aviner says, I don't understand. You need to have integrity. You're not allowed to cheat. And by the way, the argument that teachers know that students cheat doesn't make it mutter. Just like the argument that if the police know that there are thieves, doesn't mean that now it's mutter to steal, right? The police use the knowledge to get people to stop stealing. And so when a teacher knows that everyone cheats, doesn't mean the teacher approves of it. It means that what? He's trying to prevent the cheating and he isn't happy. Right? And the proof is, if you get caught cheating, you get into trouble. Right? And also saying the idea that it's something that the tzibur can't hold themselves back from is ridiculous, because this is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's rule. It's not a new gezeirah. So therefore, even Rav Aviner says, cheating is a very, very serious issue, and it's ridiculous for a person to assume that it's acceptable. Right? And so therefore, the understanding is, it goes without saying that there's an isser involved over here. And it goes without saying that there's a potential isser d'oraisa. My friend Rav Ari Leibowitz quotes from a book I don't have on my shelves, but when he quotes something, I tend to believe that it is printed in the book. There was a book that was written by Rav Belsky's students, particularly Rav Moshe David Leibowitz, who is also a long-distance friend. And somebody who's come to our shul and spoken in our shul on a couple of occasions. And it's called Rav Belsky on Honesty. And in that volume also, Rav Belsky says, I don't understand this whole idea, you know, he says about cheating on exams. He says, I don't understand. In the short term, you may feel the pressure because you think you'll get ahead. But he writes to the person who asked him the question that you should just understand, in the long term, the people who are ethical always win out. And so he really, really, really encouraged the person who wrote to him to really consider very seriously understanding not only the moral corrosiveness of the cheating, but also the fact that it works in the opposite direction, the one who doesn't cheat, right, for his or her ability to grow. All this is great. It all points out why students should not cheat. However, it doesn't answer the question that we started off with, which is, well, gee, can I do it if I know the students are going to cheat? So I saw an answer to a shayla which I didn't really understand fully, quoted in the name of Rav Mordechai Willig, who says, if you have no other choice, then give the exam, right? But really, we want to try to avoid teaching kids to cheat and steal to get ahead. Now, I didn't get a chance to discuss this answer with Rabbi Willig. But I have to tell you the truth, Dr. Wenger's question certainly belies my understanding of the answer. Dr. Wenger's understanding question of, wait a second, you always have the opportunity to cheat. So what difference does it make that it's now on Zoom, or it's now on, or it's now in another environment? The kids will always find a different way to cheat within the process. A bechina give, or a test given in a classroom also provides opportunities to cheat. And so it would seem to be a situation of chad avri dinara, right, which would seem to suggest it wouldn't be a problem. But my college-age patients are telling me that at least as far as colleges are concerned, when they're giving exams today, what they're doing to prevent this problem of widespread cheating is what they're doing is they're making the students take the exam in front of the Zoom so that they can watch, right? And this, you know, if this serves as a deterrent, then it should serve as a deterrent under those circumstances, thus discouraging the cheating. And so again, if that's what the Rebbeim and the teachers in the high schools want to be able to do, or in the elementary schools, certainly this is not necessarily a bad thing, right? To discourage, to have the kids sit in front, so that if that discourages any degree of cross illegal exams, this would be better. But the truth is, the real question we have to ask is, under this current educational model, and first of all, above everything else, it needs to be stated that our teachers are doing the efforts that they're doing is nothing short of remarkable. And how lucky we are to have those teachers who are spinning constantly with new ideas, how they are going to keep our kids engaged, how they are going to keep our kids learning at a period in time where, I can't speak for the rest of you, but from my perspective, this whole idea of being able to be on top of each other and somehow manage to do some form of anything during the day is such a nuance and such a challenge. And that, and for so many of our teachers, is from the youngest to the oldest, they're learning on the fly a new system of education that 3 months ago nobody would have ever thought about. In a, you know, now they're expected to be experts. And they're teaching people who, by the way, pick up the technology faster than they do and are bigger experts in it. I mean, just a crazy for instance. So I was working with a patient today who was having a hard time making a connection with me. And he couldn't figure out what was wrong with the system. And I said, you know what, let me call my IT guy. And I called over to my son from my office to my house. And my son says, oh, his problem is this and this. And you'll see right away he'll be able to get on. Okay, I'll talk to you later. Love you. Goodbye. 2 minutes. So I called my patient back, told him what he needs to do to make the connection. And he says, well, you have like an IT guy on speed dial?
Cool.
I said, cool, yes, cool. He wants his allowance. Right? You know? Our kids are like so three times, four times as fast. The old system doesn't, you know, the respect that we have to give those teachers and those menalim for what they're doing, and any advantage we can give them so that they're able to educate our kids and inspire our kids together with us to be Ovdei Hashem, we need to applaud, and we need to tell everyone around us to applaud. But within the process, we also need to teach our kids that whereas the teacher may not be able to see whether we're violating our own integrity, and we ourselves may not be able to see whether we're violating our integrity, he knows. And ultimately, it's to him that we're going to have to go ahead and give an accounting. And so therefore, yes, while while I believe that, you know, it's not a lifnei iver difficulty, and I don't believe that Rabbi Willig believed the halacha that it's a problem, I still think it's a good idea for us to just recognize what our limitations are and recognize our chinuch responsibilities to raise our children, not to just be answerers to tests, but to be able to be those who are answering to a higher authority. Okay, I think we're going to stop here. Rezos Hashem, we will meet on Thursday night next week. We'll decide whether it'll be a Profiles in the Pandemic in honor of Yom HaAtzmaut, or whether we will have our regular Chabura information to be decided based on my research this weekend. Okay? Everyone have a wonderful week.
Good
Be well. Bye.
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 Shabbat Shalom.
That's all.
Let me start.